Let's talk tech.
Hi guys, you are listening to Let's Talk Tech. I am Tolu, your host.
I'm Temi, also your host.
So first off, before we get on to business for today, just want to say thank you to everyone who's listened to the intro podcast and who have sent in feedback. It's been really helpful. Timmy's just going to touch on a thing or two that we got as a feedback.
Yeah, thank you for listening, everyone. Really appreciate it. Thank you for your feedback. Keep that coming. Some of you have come through with some really, really good questions, and we'll try to address some of that today. Thanks for your kind of comments around things that we could do and things that you liked. It's much appreciated. So please keep that coming. As we said in episode one, it's all about you. So what you give us, we kind of mold the podcast that way. We had a very good question about what are we defining as technology. Shout out to Mark for that question. He was essentially saying that technology can be thought of as, right from inception, if we think about fire and even like the invention of the wheel. So what are we talking about? And that's a very good point, because technology is essentially inventing things to help make other things easier. So it can be like products or services or methods, right? So we liked that question and we thought, let's define what we're talking about and let's talk tech.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're talking about is new and emerging technology. Yeah. So that is why in episode one, we focused on areas such as AI, cloud computing, big data and IoT, and so on. So that's what you can expect from this podcast. We will be looking at new and emerging technology as of 2021. And that is a perfect segue into what we're talking about today, which is let's talk AI. We are talking about artificial intelligence. And our hope for this episode is that you learn what artificial intelligence is, why it matters, and the real life applications.
Mm-hmm.
We hope that you're inspired to go find out more or even learn some of the skills that we will talk about to start playing or working with it. And to that end, we have a very special guest with us today. Shout out to Josh for joining us today.
Yeah, so Josh, it's really nice to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for taking time out of your bank holiday.
Yeah, really, really appreciate it.
Yeah. Tell us about yourself. What do you do?
So my name's Josh Urevo and I'm 25. I currently work as a computer vision engineer for a startup called Move.ai. And I'm currently working on a web app that they have to generate 3D models of human motion. So motion from videos. And yeah, so that's what I'm working on at the moment.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, so how did you get into it? What was that like? What did you study? Yeah, just take us through that journey to what you do right now.
Sure. So I would say regarding like my technology background, my first interaction came with like Code Academy before I started university. The reason why I liked it was because it was very rapid in terms of the feedback it would give me. So at the time, I was trying to learn everything. It didn't work at all.
When you say everything, like programming languages? Or...
Exactly. So I thought probably linked to my studying background before uni that in order to understand this, I need to just grasp everything. And it was just so overwhelming. and that was before I went to start studying at University of Warwick. I was initially there to study maths, but then I moved to discrete maths, which is like maths with computer science, and it was a lot more practical, let's put it that way, for me at least.
Ooh, discrete maths. Mm. Heard that before.
Josh's math was...
Wow. That's really cool. Yeah, so from University of Warwick to then going on to Code Academy.
So Code Academy, I'm in the summer leading up to the University of Warwick.
I see.
Is that what led you to... change to discrete maths then? Did you enjoy that practical application so much that you were like, I want to do this?
In hindsight, probably, because I really liked computational maths by hand, where you're doing calculus and you see your immediate answers. Whereas when I went to university, everything became very first principles.
Yeah.
Well, that must have been good though, to have had like a bit of like practical, you know, insights, you know, you could then marry the two, you know, just the theoretical bit and then the practical.
And I am grateful for the pre-university math experience.
How did you end up in computer vision, kind of the artificial intelligence space? What was the journey like to get there?
So I'd say regarding that specifically, at the end of my second year, I did a module called artificial intelligence, which was programming some like game bots inside a virtual environment, inside a simulation on the computer. And we had to like beat other bots. But the theory behind it kind of was overwhelming to the point where I didn't really understand what I was doing. So it just became a thing of just trying to complete a course as quickly as possible.
Pretty much all of uni.
Then thankfully, during the break from second year, I came in contact with this organization called Cambridge Coding Academy, which is now called Cambridge Spark. They had like this intensive boot camp for 2 days. I'm in London from Saturday and Sunday. And everything was just so practical. You're seeing images and you're seeing like a video, and then every image in the video, you would see like 90% a ball, 2% a cat, 3%, and you're seeing it change. And it just felt very
real,
visually nice to interact with, and real, exactly. And then they were just trying to break you down onto how you got there. At the time, I was just trying to survive. So
that's really cool that like on a Saturday or Sunday, you were like, you know,
put in that time.
A big shout out I'd give to kind of like do things like that was an organization called Rare Recruitment. So before I started university, they had this thing called UniStar, where they just brought together different people of, I don't know the correct terminology, black people, ethnic minorities. And they were just sharing people going to different universities, going in contact, giving recommendations about technology companies, law companies, banking companies. And it just kind of helped give you a kind of like mental structure onto like the possibilities.
That's good.
Especially with me going to study maths, because I didn't kind of, I was too narrow focused.
So it kind of broadened your scope a little bit.
Throughout my first and second year, I would be going to places like GCHQ, which is like where they do like the MI5, MI6 things.
Yeah, that's the cybersecurity arm, essentially, of government.
Okay.
Yeah. So just for more like resource from like TV media, I used to love Numbers. Numbers, NUMB with a 3RS. So it's a TV series. And I also love like NCIS and stuff like that. And I liked just the whole cybersecurity hacking idea. Obviously, the reality of what it is much different. It just kind of like instilled a kind of like desire to want to know more about it. So GCHQ, for example, Google through Rare Recruitment, Facebook through Rare Recruitment, then other financial places like FactSet, through Rare Recruitment. That's why I say Rare Recruitment.
Those organizations are great.
SEO as well, because similar things. And they actually had people who were on either or, but they were somehow combined in different ways. So we had in my first few weeks at uni, both SEO and Rare in the same place. So it just felt like we're all here together kind of thing. And if you ever need any help or any tips or any kind of role that you're looking for, just let us know. And African Caribbean society, stuff like that, variety of things.
Josh, I think you've touched on some amazing things there in terms of really utilizing your time and like the downtime you have. In the UK, we can speak of specifically, there's so many organizations at every university that can help you kind of like guide your decisions and give you insights, which I think is so key. And also in the US, they have the same, they have fairs for like Black or African-American students. They have them for Asian-American students. So just tap into your communities and really like immerse yourself, I would say. And you don't know where it will take you, but you might find something that really clicks and resonates with you.
And also touching on the part about having that practical experience as well. And, you know, Timmy, we're talking about that today, about like how YouTube is so helpful.
100%.
Like, you know, you could be in a classroom.
Of YouTube.
It is really. Because then you can get more practical examples, following on from a class or theory that you would have had.
Exactly.
And I think that's helpful for anyone really at any stage, be it in uni or if you're in, you know, in industry and wherever you don't understand. Wherever you are in life.
like for my computer science, I want to call it intensive 2 years experience there when I started transitioning. YouTube, especially Udacity courses on YouTube, was so useful in just helping me stay afloat because they broke it down in language that I could understand. Nowadays, we have even much more because so many people give so much content. However, that can feel overwhelming as well. So it's just the balance.
It is. There is a lot out there. I think that's a general gist of it. And thank you so much, Josh, for that amazing intro. We've learned a lot about how you got to where you are, the tools used along the way. And I think it's relatable stuff that a lot of people can really utilize if they so wish. And not just AI, computer science, whichever branch, not just even technology, like law, finance, there's all these resources transferable to them as well. So now we can go into the main reason you've all tuned in this podcast. Let's talk AI. What is AI? What is artificial intelligence? Josh, please. Break it down for us.
We don't speak PhD.
I don't speak PhD either.
So human on the street, please explain to me what is artificial intelligence.
Okay. So the way I'm going to do this is describe the various things I've heard about AI. So one of the definitions I've heard is it's the ability for computers to behave humanly and rationally. So it's that kind of four parts. So thinking humanly, thinking rationally, behaving humanly, behaving rationally.
Mm. So it's not robots taking over the world.
It can look like that if you approach it that way. Again, one of the things I would just strongly emphasize is that all of these are models, they're mathematical models. What that really means from my perspective is that it's just an educated guesstimate. Based on data, that's it. So it's like a really good tool, like guessing things.
When you say a mathematical model, what does that mean?
So what I would say is like typically you have rules, and if anyone's done programming, for example, you've got an input, you program some rules and you get an answer.
So basically you're saying A plus B equals C.
Exactly. Make a function that adds two numbers together.
Yeah.
Give those two numbers, create this program and give you your answer kind of thing. That's typically like what we'd call classical programming, the programming beforehand. Nowadays, with a part of AI called machine learning, there's this part where instead of me saying 1 + 3 = 4, let me just give 1 and 3 and 4 and similar things like that as the input to this thing. And I'll be able to then generate that. This is adding and create a rule or a program that does that for me. Sometimes we go from there and then try to generalize that to the whole world kind of thing. But the reality of it is that there's so many limitations and weaknesses to it. So that's why, for example, if you've seen things where you have an image of someone and they try to guess this age, you see how it fails a lot. Again, that's an example of AI. Or if you see, like, I'm sure, like you mentioned with coded bias, if you see like an image of a black person sometimes or an ethnic minority person, sometimes in these more law databases or criminal databases, the model, because it maybe hasn't seen different examples, would say that person could be more criminally inclined, unfortunately.
So what I'm getting from what you're saying is AI is you take an input and you expect an output. And how that happens is you kind of train it to understand the relationship ultimately between the input and output and the operations it needs to perform to get to the output.
That's one way to look at it.
I would say that's more a subfield of it. So with AI, there was the bit where you did these hard-coded rules. So like you had to do everything from start to finish.
And what would we call that? Is that the classical
traditional?
Okay. Classical programming. People sometimes refer to as symbolic AI. Okay. I don't want to flood this with so many terminologies. So that's where, for example, if you have very detailed systems, like in oil and gas or in finance, where you have this program that does a lot of things and it gives you some output, maybe like predicts a type of stock you should look at or stuff like that. But I don't want to use predicts, but basically it just does a sequence of things that has been already hard-coded and gives you the answer that the human would want to output.
So that would be classed as like not so intelligent
Exactly.
For example. Okay.
It's still
intelligent because it is still performing analysis, and it could probably do it faster than you are.
Exactly.
And it's taking into consideration different possible ways more than probably the human brain can do at once.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why some people, again, give an alternative definition to AI as being the ability to automate human thought.
Mm-hmm. Because
that's the kind of approach that, okay, we have an intellectual task that is normally performed by humans. Mm-hmm. Let me automate this.
Yes.
That's, again, another definition of AI as well.
So does that mean a program like Excel, where you can do formulas, could be thought of as very low-level artificial intelligence?
It is, because every single one of those functions, if you do equals sum, that's a function that does what it's intended to do. It might feel simple because we do that and we take for granted how simple it is normally. Yeah. But the truth is a combination of those things creates programs and creates financial systems that are very needed for certain people.
And make life easier,
That's exactly. Cool. That's level one. I think we get that.
Yeah.
What's level two, Josh? What do we call that?
So typically, again, from that, I mentioned that there was more like the classical programming where you have the rules and you have the data and then you give it an answer. So the rule would be, for example, A plus B equals C.
Mm-hmm.
The data would be A is 1, B is 3.
Yeah.
The answer would be 4.
Mm-hmm.
That's what classical programming would fall under.
Mm-hmm.
There's another branch, which is machine learning. Again, a subfield of AI where instead of me telling you that it's A plus B equals, it tries to determine that from the data.
Mm-hmm.
It tries to, again, give a very good guesstimate based on the data that it sees as to what the relationship between 1 and 3 and 4 would be.
I want to break that down a little bit. So when you say based on the data that it sees, how does it know that 1 and 3 should be added? How do we do that?
Simple machine learning. Here, I gave 1 and 3 and we have 4. 1 and 3 is thought of as the input. 4 is thought of as the output or the label. In machine learning, there's a type of subset called supervised learning where you have labels for. You have different labels like that. And then it tries to take all that information and...
to get to 4.
Exactly.
Yeah, to learn what you would then do with following inputs. So you kind of train it with loads of data saying this and this equals this, but you don't actually say this and this equals this. You kind of train it to figure that out.
And practically speaking, what that would look like is, let's say you have a space, a piece of paper, and you have X and Y inside it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got like dots, basically group those dots in a good way. Find a line that splits it into two groups that are of interest to you, or find a way to have a line that does like regression, for example, for you, where you have your
what's
input
regression?
Numbers. So, for example, what regression would look like from a machine learning perspective is, I have information about a house, how many rooms it has, the kind of color scheme, the number of floors, stuff like that. And then the output would be how much it costs. We typically call it regression because those numbers are numbers. So like 1.3 if you're using a million scale, or just 13 if you're using a different scale. Again, it all depends on how you define the problem.
Yeah.
But typically you have your inputs and you give a numeric value for your output. Mm. Really, it's a good guesstimate mapping from your input to your desired output.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Yeah. It sounds a lot more creative than you would think.
Exactly. Yeah.
What's the next level up? We've got machine learning, which is, as you said, breaks down into subsections. So you've kind of got to group things, got to classify things, you've got to train the program and the model to give you a good guess or a predicted output.
There's a difference between classical programming and machine learning.
Mm-hmm.
With classical programming, you're trying to get your answers.
Mm-hmm.
You're given rules, you're given data, and you say A plus B equals that answer.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with machine learning, you have the data, you have the answer, and you want to try and generate the rule.
So Josh showed us a diagram that has the most outside circle is artificial intelligence. Then within that circle, you've got another circle that is machine learning. Then within that, you've got another, which was deep learning.
Deep learning, exactly.
What is deep learning?
So deep learning, there are ways I can approach this. So let's say you have a crumpled piece of paper and you want to uncrumple it. Each movement with your hand is a transformation, if you want to call it that, which is like you unpeel it this way, you do it this way until you get your final uncrumpled piece of paper. Each of those are called layers. So depending on how many things I do with my hands in order to get to my final uncrumpled paper would be the number of layers. But if we still break it down, each of those hand movements are very simple. I move my hand like this. I do this. I do this. I do that. I stack them together, kind of like a Lego block. I start from my input, have Lego bricks until I get my uncrumpled output, which is my uncrumpled piece of paper. So deep learning, again, the deep part is how many layers, the depth of your layers. The learning part is how we get the educated guesstimate. Really, what that is let's say each of those layers were knobs that I tweak around. And you know, typically with knobs, it's so intricate if you want to try and find the correct setting.
Yeah.
For example, use the analogy of like a DJ deck where you've got different knobs. Sorry, a sound deck where you've got different knobs and you're trying to make sure the sound sounds good. Each of those knobs could be thought of as a layer, and we have to perfectly combine each of those knobs to create the output. That's what learning is in this context. Mm-hmm. And the way we do that is we see at each stage, what output am I given based on the way the knobs are at the moment? I'm given this, it looks like this. This is far from my value. I need to tweak it a lot. Or I give it this and it's very close to this. This isn't far from it, so I don't really need to tweak it too much. Mm-hmm. And then combining that and trying different types of inputs, different types of outputs, I'll get a nice guesstimated, informed solution.
Yeah.
Informed in quotes. Solution that is how my knob should be, basically. And we could call this knob thing an image classifier, or we could call that a way of predicting if there's tumor in an image. Again, it all depends on the kind of data that you feed it. So one of the most important...
You mentioned Coded Bias, which is a documentary on Netflix. Yeah. Recommended, guys. A really good watch because it also has really practical examples. But I think I would like to know what some of your favorite applications of AI that you've encountered.
That I've encountered specifically. Yeah. Okay. So again, a doctor assistant, for example. So what that looks like is you have medical images and then you map it to a prediction to if there's a tumor inside it.
Mm-hmm.
Another example, self-driving cars. So you have like your car dashboard and then you map it to turn the steering wheel this way, turn it this way, turn it that way. That's another example. Board game AI, like we saw with AlphaGo from Google.
Yeah.
So you have a Go or chess previously, and then you say, do this, do that, do this, don't do that. Not don't do that typically, but do this. Or you have like answering questions, for example, general knowledge question. For example, I have a problem that I'm trying to code and I don't understand where to go, which happens a lot. And Google typically gives you a list of resources, but I'd rather just someone tell me, do this, do that. When I'm searching, that's an example of answering questions, which is an application of AI. How good it is the challenge at the moment. But typically, that's an example.
Sorry, all the things you've just mentioned, would you say those examples of like a combination of machine learning and deep learning, or what kind of category would they fall into?
So typically all of those examples are examples of deep learning.
Okay. Mm.
So again, the reason why they are is because it's how you define each thing. So one of the easiest ways to make this simple for a beginner like me, for example, if I were to start, just deal with the data. So you've got video data, you've got sound data, so .wav files, you've got image data, PNG, JPEG, stuff like that. Play with the data that you're interested in. I don't like seeing text, just text. Like, that's not something that inspires me.
Yeah.
things that do inspire me is music. There's no ranking in terms of one is more important. Like text is beautiful for people. Like I've also had to learn how to read properly kind of thing in terms of reading books that are very thick and technical.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because I'd rather someone just describe it and show me a visual.
Yeah, it's the way that you like to learn.
It's the way you like to learn, isn't it?
So you mentioned things like general knowledge stuff, self-driving cars. What about stuff like Siri? Is that AI?
That is. And just to answer that specifically, yeah, let's break it down together. So Siri, I give it speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I say, hey Siri, what's the weather
like? Which is data that you're giving.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I actually answered, hey Siri.
just wanted to put that in.
So I'm not going to say the first bit. Something Siri.
Yeah.
What's the weather like?
Yeah.
That is speech data. That's sound data. And what Siri would give me back is, again, sound data, which is today the weather's going to be blah, blah, blah. The reason why I broke it down like that is to say that that could be simplified as saying I'm mapping from sound data to sound data.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how would that work practically? That would be get a collection of sound data like that, get a collection of sound outputs like Siri saying different things, and just map them together and use a deep learning technique to create a good mapping between the two.
Mm-hmm.
That's an example for Siri or images, for example. Let's say you have a very old image and you've got a picture of it and you want it to look more crisp and bigger resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's mapping image to image. Image data. Again, it all depends on how creative you want to be with it.
Mm-hmm.
It could be something like, I'm interested in music. So mapping someone's Spotify track to just the piano version of that track, sound to sound. Again, typically there are three types of deep learning models we use, but some are more appropriate for others for different tasks. And it all just depends on choosing them. And it's not like you can ask me, what should I do here? Each task is different and unique, but you can find resources to do, as in, I will answer your question. I'm just saying, generally speaking, like if you were to solve the problem for yourself practically, it's a thing of not being afraid to just try.
Because it sounds like a lot of machine learning, deep learning is trial and error. Like you try loads and you're building up kind of that knowledge for the model. Yeah. So you need to try loads. If you don't try loads, it's not going to be very effective.
Yeah. How would it identify what is not?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But too much rubbish is also still rubbish.
That's a good point.
And honestly, sometimes that's what causes the problems we see with like the biased data that we see, where I don't want to call it rubbish for there, but it's more so you've got information that doesn't generalize well. You hear a lot of people saying if you take a picture of a typical corporate firm, you would see most people not being ethnic minorities.
Mostly white men. I'm not afraid to say it. It's cool.
Now, if you train a model to classify, for example, what are the features of a
successful board member, successful executive? It will give you
that because all it sees is that example. And that's why, again, there's a whole process in making sure that your data is balanced.
Yeah.
And making sure that I'm not just giving rubbish. It all depends on the context, but data that isn't going to be helpful.
Yeah. I like what you're saying about making it more generalistic. Yeah. And I think that's something they cover really well in Coded Bias.
Yeah,
shout out again. Thanks, Josh, for the recommendation. Really recommend it to you guys on Netflix. But essentially, what you're talking about is the person who creates the model or puts together different models, different layers, kind of decides how generalistic that model will be and how useful it may be for various people.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't have balanced people or people who are willing to take inputs from white people, black people, Asian people, and like a more comprehensive view of society, we may end up with artificial intelligence models, applications that are skewed. And like Josh said, to put it bluntly, rubbish for certain groups of people because it hasn't taken us into account when you're training that model.
I mean, yeah. And I guess at the end of the day, it's really important to then get various people also working
diversity
on models, right? As opposed to just one person, because models are pretty much modeling the developers.
Yeah, because like I said, it's a very creative prison. It depends on how you decide to approach it, right?
Exactly.
So it could give us stronger models if we have more diversity and better AI.
Yeah,
for everyone.
Definitely. And I think like one of the most profound things that I heard in Coded Bias again, that if we keep, you know, just focusing on what the world is, because that's what we're feeding into the machines, really. How are you going to be able to capture what we want the world to become?
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
Because the data, at the end of the day, is based on historical information. So, for example, let's say we have a video of a football game that just happened. Yeah. That football game is a snapshot of history.
Yeah.
So every information that's tailored there is going to be a snapshot.
Mm-hmm.
The model isn't there are some creative versions, but the model is taking in information based on past experiences, a past video, a past sound clip, a past image, and trying to then make some sense from it. And we know every single day is unique. If we create a model that is based on your personal experiences from a few days ago,
mm-hmm.
it limits to new experiences that happens tomorrow, for example.
Yeah, for example, like COVID.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like if you had a model that predicted your in-office success rate before 2020.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly.
It would say that you'd just stay there in the office.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was watching a really interesting video. Cold Fusion, guys, on YouTube is amazing. It's one of my favorite YouTube channels. And
a bit long sometimes, but yeah.
A bit long, but I kind of enjoy it. I enjoy it. I don't mind sometimes. I don't digest it all that often. I will go on it and have like an hour binge and just watch loads of different videos. But essentially, it's a channel that breaks down loads of different things. And they had one talking about an AI model released by OpenAI called GPT-3. And it was really interesting because what Josh said just reminded me of it. Basically, it's really, really advanced and it's... like, I think it had one of the largest, like, networks ever at the time. Loads of data points and whatnot, like one of the largest libraries. So it could write essays. So you'd give it an input and say, I want an essay about how climate change is going to lead to aliens invading the Earth. Or I want a fictional story. And it would create one. And it read syntax, grammar, it flowed, and it was engaging. They even published a Guardian article from it, and it made sense. You could ask it to break down Bitcoin and you would give it the long description of what Bitcoin is, blockchain, and it gave you a very simplified paragraph of this is what Bitcoin is, and it made a lot of sense. It was amazing. But there were limitations. Like Josh said, it's learning from everything it was fed. So I think they fed it Wikipedia data, a lot of Google stuff, newspaper articles. So it was really good at all of that stuff. So they did a test where they said, an attorney is about to go to court, so attorney US, lawyer UK.
Yeah.
So a lawyer is about to go to court and their suit is stained, right? However, they have a bath suit or bathing suit, swimmer, whatever you want to call it, that is clean. What should they do? And GPT-3 says, the lawyer wore the bathing suit to court. And of course, we know with human reasoning context, that is not appropriate.
Yeah,
you don't wear shorts to court.
Yeah.
But because of the way the sentence was phrased, it took the input as, you have a problem, your suit is dirty, you have an alternative outfit that is clean, wear that. Because it didn't have the logical reason to deduce that a bathing suit is not appropriate to wear to court. It hasn't been fed with that particular instance. So like, just it's just a snapshot of what you've given. And if you don't give it the right things, it cannot give you the right results.
Yeah.
And I think... last episode, I said, are computers going to take over the world? Do we have super intelligence? I feel like the answer is no. We don't yet. It's like the beginning stages. We're still figuring out, like Josh said, it's still guesstimating, right? It's not quite intelligent yet. Can it reason? Some of them can. Do they have emotional intelligence that we were talking about?
Yeah.
Not really. Yeah. How do you code in emotional intelligence?
How do you code in ethics?
How values? Do you code in ethics values? So
can that be quantified?
Those are things that we're figuring out. But... we probably will get there, I think.
Yeah. It's left to Josh.
Yeah. And at this point, I'll just throw out a word that I love. When I feel like things are beyond us, I just say quantum computing.
Mm-hmm.
I did that at uni, one of my dissertations. I was like, so basically, this thing I was trying to do didn't work, and I blame it on the fact that we don't have quantum computers yet. That's what I did. I was like, I need more computational power. But on a serious note, I think quantum computing, that's coming later in the season, guys. So I won't dwell too much on it. I think that could give us the ability to maybe give us that emotional gray area for artificial intelligence. Yeah. Josh, what do you think?
I'm not sure. The reason why I'm not sure is because I don't really understand what quantum computing is.
Listen to our episode later in the season.
Okay.
We're going to break it down. What are you most excited about with regards to AI, and what are you most concerned about from someone who works within the industry?
So my naive thought of AI, which got me excited 4 years ago, 5 years ago when I started going into it, was I thought it was going to help save my time in the sense of like, I just do something quickly, get it done, and then I'm finished. Move on, and it just keeps doing what I want it to do kind of thing. The actual reality of it is it's a lot of hard work, and it's a lot of human labeling.
Like it.
it's a lot of human programming. It's a lot of creating systems. It's not a standalone concept. It's possibly a small bit in a big system. And so, yeah, just kind of like emphasizing its limitations and emphasizing that it's not perfect. Again, it's a model, so it won't be perfect. So let's say, for example, there's a startup that's creating an AI system that does XYZ. It's an emphasis that this XYZ system needs to have other fallbacks.
Mm.
It needs to just be conscious that the system isn't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really good point.
Yeah.
So being like a domain, if you want to use it, expert, but having some sort of wider perspective, like Temi said, about a problem instead of just blindly saying AI will solve it.
Yes, yeah. I love that. I love that. I think that's very important.
Again, that creates more work as well. And so the AI developer, if you want to call it that, would also need to respect that and also work in those fields and also
and be able to communicate that as well. Yeah,
exactly.
So I think, do we feel like our listeners will understand what AI is now?
We'll have to leave it to them.
But I think Josh, you have really, really given it like an amazing minutes here, breaking it down.
The best tip I'd give is, let's say there's anything that you want to do programming wise or related to AI, search it on YouTube and just spend time on that first video that you see. Don't try and look for the best resource. There's always going to be a better resource in terms of your feelings and stuff like that. On like, oh, this looks nicer, this looks more animated, stuff like that. But just spending time with that first resource that you see, I'll just list out the types of data. Just dealing with that and just getting comfortable with that is a nice way to just start. So you've got vector data, which is like a list of attributes, which could be a list of statistics about a team, about a player, and you just have it in a list. Or you have an image data. So, for example, a screenshot of this video call, for example, / podcast. You have a sound data, the audio version of the podcast. You've got text data, the caption from Google Meets that you can use. You've got time series data, which is more like stocks. Day one, day two, day three, and so on. You've got other types of sequence data. You've got video data like this, and you've got volumetric data.
Mm-hmm.
Whichever one you're interested in, just play about with it. Answer a question that you're interested in. Don't try and be the first one that solves it. And just have fun with it.
Gosh, this has been so good. I feel like it's been really helpful.
Thank you so much.
Really insightful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Josh. So,
amazing breakdown. We've just spoken about AI. So what's coming up? Teaser. Next episode, we're continuing with our technology breakdown season, where we take various technology concepts and we've established that is new and emerging technology as of 2021, breaking it down and making it simple for you, our listeners, whether from an interest perspective or potential career perspective. And we'll also, as Josh has just brilliantly done, break down the skills you need, the things you can work on to learn more about it yourself if you wish to. Awesome. Thank you. So next up, what can you expect on episode 3 of Let's Talk Tech? We will be talking about cloud. Let's break down cloud computing. So join us in 2 weeks from this episode being released to hear more about cloud computing.
Yes. So for info on when that will be out, so you can follow at after grad this. Check us out on Instagram for our upcoming podcast. And please leave us comments. You know, your reviews would be really helpful. As we've said, you are the captains of the ship. This is not a pirate ship.
Yeah.
So we'd love to hear from y'all. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.